This week, we are rerunning the opera series with Desiree Mays that aired here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe in the spring. The opera about which we are speaking this morning corresponds to the one being performed tonight at the Santa Fe Opera, which is on the web at santafeopera.org. They can also be reached by phone at 505-986-5900. And I would like now to introduce Desiree Mays. She is a storyteller. She speaks all over the world on opera. She's the author of the book Opera Unveiled, which comes out every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera season. She gives the preview lectures nightly at the Santa Fe Opera. Welcome, Desiree, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello, Mary Charlotte.
So, Opera Unveiled, your book, this is the 14th year that you've published this
book. I know, it's unbelievable. Every time I think maybe I won't do it again, someone comes up and says, when is your next book coming out? So, I think it's helpful. You know, it gives background and the stories and sort of anecdotal material. And they're easy to read chapters. They're short.
Right.
They're good for, you know, to read on the way to the opera or on an airplane flying in, whatever. I mean, it seems to serve a purpose. And it means I don't have to copy my terrible notes and send them out to people. So the book has been great. It's done very well, and people seem to enjoy it. So,
and it's always a different color and a beautiful cover picture every year.
Yes,
and
yes.
Each chapter corresponds to one of the five operas in the Santa Fe Opera. And today we're talking about the opera Tosca by Giacomo Puccini.
That's right. Puccini, who is one of the most beloved composers, I suppose, of all time, who wrote some of the big operatic hits, and we're going to hear one of the greatest, which is really grand opera in the grand style, with larger-than-life characters in a wonderfully romantic place, Rome in 1800, and three great buildings in Rome that actually still exist. You can go visit them. The Farnese Palace of the Second Act is actually the French Embassy today. Maybe not that easy to visit, but you can certainly go to the Church of Sant'Andrea della Valle and to the Castel Sant'Angelo, two of the great monuments, wonderful monuments of Rome. People love that. It was very appealing. So Puccini, when he saw the play of this piece by Victorien Sardou, the French writer, he was really attracted to it. He actually saw it in French and didn't speak French at the time, but he realized the potential. He also saw Sarah Bernhardt play the role. Apparently, she was quite extraordinary as Tosca, La Tosca, because Tosca is about a diva, whether it's a theater diva or an operatic diva. It's a diva playing a diva. So there's all sorts of wonderful levels as you go to the opera and watch Tosca. Is this Maria Callas was so perfect as Tosca because she was a diva seemingly on and off stage. Her life, her personal life was a tragedy and she struggled, but she devoted herself to life and art, which of course is the great aria of this opera, Visi d'arte, I lived for art and love. And she really embodied that. So I think there's that to remember about Tosca. And yet when Victorien Sardou researched this piece, this was a writer who always researched the characters and the time, the period, very carefully. And he found that there had been a wild young girl in the countryside who had looked after goats on the hillsides. And the Benedictine nuns took her in to train her to be a nun. And Cimarosa, who was the court musician of the time, the composer, heard her sing and said, I think her voice is so great, she should be shared with everyone. And the nun said, no, we don't want to give her up. So ultimately, she was taken by Cimarosa to Rome, to the top of the church itself, to the Pope, who heard her sing and said, yes, she has the potential, her beautiful voice should be shared with everyone. So she becomes Floria Tosca, the great prima donna, the first great diva, a wonderful singer.
Now, wait a minute, is this a true story?
That was a true story. It was the germ of the story that Victorien Sardou based his character on Tosca on. So in the opera, she's very religious. You know, she's in fact, Cavaradossi, her lover, doesn't dare tell her about some of the aspects of the plot because she's afraid she'll tell it to her confessor in confession. When she first appears, she's laden with an armful of flowers that she has brought for the statue of the Madonna. So there is this aspect of religiosity about Tosca, which I think really deepens her character, and where Puccini didn't bring that to the fore in the opera, it never nevertheless exists. There are those sort of germs. So this is where she's coming from.
Now, the original piece that you're talking about was a theater piece.
It was a theater piece. It was a play by Victorien Sardou called La Tosca, and he cast Sarah Bernhardt in the role.
So she wasn't, Sarah Bernhardt wasn't singing.
No. That was the great, she acted this piece all over the world for about 25 years, actually. In fact, she broke her leg in one of the performances when she and Scarpia get into this fight, and she fell. And from that fall, she delivers one of the great speeches from the floor. And the opera singers picked up on that. So the great aria is often Visidate sung as she's been pushed over by Scarpia on the floor.
Oh, my goodness.
In a recent production, I saw sort of a little bit Verismo, realism with a capital R. Scarpia has taken her magnificent cape and he's thrown it on the floor, and this is where he's going to rape her. And when he actually pushes her down, this is where she sings the aria, which is very poignant. You know, it's a rape scene. But we've got ahead of ourselves. We should probably go back to the beginning.
Well, we want to talk about the plot. Mm-hmm. And as we go along, as we always do, we play excerpts from the opera. Mm-hmm. So it starts out, I mean, you have the main character is Tosca, and she is an opera singer, played by an opera singer, as you say, and her boyfriend is a painter.
Yes, he's a Frenchman, which in those days was not a good person to be if you were in the Papal States. Rome was ruled by the Pope, and it was constantly being overrun, the Papal States, by either the Austrians or the French. Cavaradossi is a Frenchman, and he has been assigned to paint a great mural, a great painting in a Roman church, which he is doing to sort of fill in time, if you like, because he's waiting for Tosca to finish her engagement in Rome, and then he plans to go with her to her next engagement, her next gig, which is going to be in Venice. Of course, that doesn't happen, but this is the scenario at the beginning. They're in this really beautiful church, the Church of Sant'Andrea della Valle, in the center of Rome. And it's the whole of the first act is set in the church, so we're drawn immediately into that atmosphere. The contrast of the sacristan, who's a little garrulous, the only sort of comedic character in the whole piece, he's not very happy about being assigned to Cavaradossi, this painter, because he sees him as a Voltairian. He reads Voltaire, and that was sacrilege, and you could go to jail for that in those days. So he's bumbling around. Cavaradossi comes in, and he's painting his portrait. But just before that, in the very opening, we play the opening chords. They're called the Scarpia chords, the chords that juxtapose the sacred and the profane, which is sort of what this opera is about.
Scarpia being the bad guy.
Scarpia is the bad guy, who we will get to, but these are his chords. And then you'll hear Angelotti. Angelotti is an escaped political prisoner who is running, who has escaped and who has come to the church to hide in the chapel of the Attavanti family, his family, where his sister has actually hidden clothes for him, women's clothing, so that if he can make it to the chapel, he can disguise himself as a woman and escape. So in the very opening, you'll first of all hear the Scarpia chords, which are ominous chords, and then the sort of the nervousness of Angelotti as he enters the church and looks for the key to his chapel and hides. So I probably should preface this before we play any more of the recordings. This is a very famous recording we're playing, Mary Charlotte, from 1957.
Oh, my goodness.
I chose to do this because the interpretations are so great. The conductors, Dimitri Mitropoulos and Licia Albanese, one of the great sopranos, is Tosca. And the great Leonard Warren sings Scarpia. So if it's not quite up to snuff in terms of our recordings
the
today.
The audio. No, that's all right.
That's why. So, but this next next one is Pavarotti. I'm such a Pavarotti fan, and he sang this opera so beautifully. So we will hear the aria Recondita Armonia from Cavaradossi. Cavaradossi is doing this gorgeous painting. It's a painting of Mary Magdalene. She's got flowing blonde hair and blue eyes. And the sacristan comments that he's used as a model, a woman who keeps coming to the church to pray, and he doesn't think that's appropriate. But she's not there just to pray. It turns out this is the sister of the escaped prisoner, and she is there doing the sort of the setup for the escape. Now, Cavaradossi doesn't know this, but he looks at the painting, and then he thinks of Tosca, whom he loves totally. He's passionately in love with her. Now, she has black hair and dark eyes, and he thinks of the wonder of art, how he can bring into this one painting the beauty of the woman he's seeing in the church with the blonde hair, but marry her image to his love for Tosca, so his love is in this piece of art, this great painting. So he sings a lovely aria, Recondita Armonia, and this, as I said, is Luciano Pavarotti.
Coi santi e lascia stare i santi. Santi. L'arte nel suo mistero, le diverse bellezze insieme confonde.
Luciano Pavarotti. He sure can sing.
Yeah, he sure could sing. it's a very special, unique sound that he had. And it always gives me pause for thought that, you know, these singers move on, pass on, die, and yet we're left with these extraordinary sounds which take on an added poignancy when you hear them after they've gone. So I always get that reaction. I play Pavarotti, everyone sighs and wishes he was still with us.
I know. Well, it's not that we don't have any other great opera singers around.
No.
We've got a summer full of them.
Right, but there is a sort of a following. Whenever I play Maria Callas, I know the audience are all going to go, oh, this is so great. I mean, she still has an amazing cult, this woman. Her sound was so unique, and yet at the end it was not so great, and yet she's still beloved. These people become icons, and there's something sort of special going on there, I think, and certainly Pavarotti fits that description. Well, at this point, Tosca is heard offstage. She sings, Mario, Mario, outside the church. This is a little ploy that Puccini used many times. We hear the leading lady, the soprano, the prima donna, before we see her. He does it with Butterfly when she comes up the hill to her wedding. We hear her before we see her. That's an amazingly effective theatrical ploy. But she finally comes bursting into the church, and she brings the flowers to the Madonna statue, and she kisses Cavaradossi, and they plan to meet that evening. And then she looks at the portrait, and she's not too happy with this portrait. She said, who is the woman in the portrait, the blonde, and why are you painting her? Are you dating her? she's very jealous. She's very naive. She's a sort of an innocent. Throughout the piece, she really doesn't know what exactly is going on, though she becomes a victim. And at this point, she's just jealous. So he assures her that he loves her, and her parting shot as she leaves the church is, change her eyes from blue to black.
That's the thing that we have opera after opera. Mm-hmm. Jealous women, yes. Jealous men, jealous. You can write an opera that doesn't have jealousy in it.
Right, right. But then if you're dating someone and you think they're dating someone else, you're going to be jealous. I mean, it's a very human characteristic, and I suppose something we all feel. You see the scarf of another woman in the, next with your husband or your boyfriend or whatever it is, and it raises questions, and that little germ of jealousy rises its ugly head, and she gets very angry. She's angry and jealous. However, he manages to calm her down, and they sing a lovely love duet before she leaves. Maybe we could hear a little of that now. Just a snippet of the love duet.
Yeah, we can only do snippets here. You're going to have to go see the opera, ladies and gentlemen.
But actually, that's fine. I think if you get an idea of what it sounds like, you have some idea of what you're getting into, and I really believe we need to hear the music rather than just talk about it, so great that on this show we can play music, because that's not always the case. So anyway, she leaves, and Cavaradossi meets with Angelotti, and they hear the cannon goes off to announce that a prisoner has escaped from the Castel Sant'Angelo, and the two men hurriedly leave. Shortly afterwards, the Baron Scarpia arrives. Now, this is one of the most evil, lascivious, foul creatures in opera. He's a really evil character.
Yeah.
And was based, actually, on a true character, a Baron Scarpia, who came originally from Sicily, but was the chief of secret police for Queen Maria Carolina, who was the Austrian Queen of Naples. Without getting into the history of how Italy was split up at this point, one needs to remember it was not Italy as
right.
we know it. That didn't happen until later in Verdi's career. It had happened then. But in 1800, this was a different state. And there was a wonderful little back history here, I suppose. Angelotti is a political prisoner. He has escaped. But why was he so hunted? The reason was that apparently many years before, in his youth, he had been in London, and he had had assignations in Vauxhall Gardens, which was sort of the Fun Gardens Fair type place in London, with a woman who was really a prostitute. And then all these years later, when he's back in Italy, he's at a banquet, and he meets Emma Lady Hamilton, the wife of the British ambassador in Naples. Turns out it's the same woman.
It was the prostitute
he
had sex with in the pleasure garden.
Right. She's also the famous woman, Emma Lady Hamilton, who was Lord Nelson's lover. She had quite a history, this lady, but apparently she realizes who he is, and she says, I want him dead. Yeah, you know, I want him executed in the galleys or whatever. So there's a big hunt on for this man for much more than any political wrongdoing he has done. So at this point, the Queen has ordered Baron Scarpia to come to Rome to capture Angelotti. So all of this is in the play. So actually, I always encourage people, if you can, get a copy of the original play and read it, because it fills in a lot of the gaps that the opera just can't do. Opera can't do all
that. No, they're so busy singing, they can't have 27 characters.
No, it's not so much that. They don't cover a lot of history.
Yeah.
They're more busy singing about what they're feeling at the moment.
Right.
So when Scarpia then enters, he has tortured the jailer when Angelotti escaped. He found that he had gone to the church. He has now gone to the church. So he, with his henchmen, he searches the church and he finds the Adavanti chapel is open, and he finds a fan. When Cavaradossi and Angelotti escaped with the disguise, they dropped the fan. So Scarpia picks it up and he looks at it and he thinks he wants Angelotti dead. He also wants Cavaradossi out of the way because he desires and lusts after Tosca. And he looks at the fan and he thinks, well, what the handkerchief did for Otello and Iago, the picking up of Desdemona's handkerchief, the fan will do with Tosca. So when Tosca returns to the church, he shows her the fan and he says, Cavaradossi is unfaithful. And she goes tearing off to the villa they were to spend the night. And of course, he sends his henchmen after them to capture Angelotti and Cavaradossi. So that happens then. But then there's this incredible scene. It's one of the great moments of theatre, I think, where Scarpia stays in the great church. And we hear the beginning of the Te Deum, a prayer of thanksgiving. And the congregation comes in, and then the clergy in their magnificent crimson scarlet robes, they enter the church. And he is only thinking of what he will do to both Angelotti, who he plans to hang, and Tosca, whom he plans to rape. So he's in church thinking of this, and he sings these amazing lines, Va Tosca, go Tosca, I desire you and I want you, and you'll hear it. And against his monologue, his soliloquy, his aria, you'll hear the Te Deum in the background, which finally builds into this climax as he says, as Scarpia says, Tosca, you make me forget God. And then the Te Deum takes over and the curtain falls on the first act. It's a powerful ending with a marvelous juxtaposition of the two.
Like he's thinking about God the rest of the time.
Yeah, exactly.
As he's sending people off to be tortured.
Exactly, yeah. He enjoys torture. So maybe we could hear, maybe this is a long section, but part of Scarpia's lines in the great church, Va Tosca.
was the evil, evil Scarpia.
Absolutely. In the setting of the great cathedral at the middle of the, in front of the high altar.
Great bells.
Yeah, great church bells. And Puccini listened to the sounds of the Roman church bells and wrote them into the score, which is a lovely touch.
What, do you have to get bells, somebody in the orchestra to play church bells?
Yes, that's what they do. Yeah, sort of imitate them. So here the Scarpia was the great Leonard Warren. In Santa Fe, we have actually two Scarpias. The first one is Raymond Assetto for July. And then in the middle of August for the rest of the season, we'll have the truly great Thomas Hampson, who's one of the great singers of this country and interpreters of this role. So I think that's something to look forward to. He has said, "Go, Tosca. Scarpia has been the one who roused you to jealous passion. All your suspicions are to me full of promise. Do not forget the name of Scarpia. Go, Tosca." Great stuff.
We're talking to Desiree Mays, author of Opera Unveiled, about Tosca. Now, we've just gotten as far as the second act.
Yes, this is a three-act opera. Now we are in the Farnese Palace, where Scarpia is having dinner. The windows are open onto the courtyard below, where there's a great celebration because news has come that the French have been defeated at the Battle of Marengo. They actually got it wrong. Napoleon won that battle. And we hear that in the middle of the act. So, and Tosca has been engaged that night to sing a special cantata at this banquet at which the Queen is in attendance. So we have Scarpia at his desk, and the open windows, you can hear the gavotte and the music coming from the floors below, which is a lovely touch. He's waiting for his men to come back to tell him that they have found Angelotti, and they do come in. Spoleto, his henchman, comes in and says, "Angelotti, we did not find Angelotti, but we found Cavaradossi, and we've brought him in." So he's brought in very angry. "Why have I been arrested, and why am I here?" And he's interrogated by Scarpia. The two men then sit listening to Tosca singing her cantata off stage. It's a very effective moment. She's singing at the banquet, and we're on the edge of our chairs now because we know what's going to happen. And finally, Scarpia slams the window shut, and he orders that Cavaradossi be taken away and tortured. The torture rooms are in an adjoining suite, so within hearing distance, as we'll find out. And then Tosca appears. Scarpia has said that he needs to see her after she has finished her performance. She comes in and says, "Why am I here?" And then, "Why is Cavaradossi here?" And suddenly she realizes that there's something very serious going on, because Scarpia wants to know about Angelotti. She won't tell him. And then we get to the verismo, the realism part of this opera that most of the critics did not like at the time. They liked their operas cleansed of anything that was really brutal. Death was not allowed to be shown on stage, for instance. And here we have the torture of Cavaradossi within earshot. And throughout this grim scene, in fact, the section we're going to play starts, "Aprite la porta," open the door, he says to his henchmen, so that Tosca can hear the torture of Cavaradossi. So this is the scene of the torture, and you'll hear how it's ratcheted up in the music. He is being tortured off stage.
You're going to make us listen to this?
Yes, I'm going to make you listen to this. And Tosca has to listen to it. So suddenly our sympathy is with her. We're in her shoes, wondering how this is going to work out and how she can put a stop to it. So let's listen to a little of the torture scene from the second act of Tosca.
Più forte, parlate, gioia,
So not a pleasant moment in their lives.
No, no, this is realism, sort of foretelling a lot of theater that was to come, actually, after Puccini, I suppose. Anyway, the outcome of this is that Tosca realizes there's something going on here, and she turns to Scarpia and says, "Quanto il prezzo?" What is your price? And he tells her that she is the price. She's absolutely amazed, shocked, and says, "No way." And then he says, "Well, they're building the execution for the scaffold for Cavaradossi." And he gives his orders to his police, and she finally breaks. She says, "All right, I give in. I will be yours if Cavaradossi can be freed." So at this moment, everything stops. The action just stops, and Tosca sings this really beautiful introspective aria, Avvisi d'arte, probably one of the better known arias in the entire opera. She sings, "I lived for art and love. Sweet consolation I brought to those who are poor and unhappy. Always with deep emotion, my true devotion I poured out to the glory of the world. Why, O Lord, withdraw your hand from me?" There is a sense of why have you forsaken me? It's a prayer, this piece, and very beautiful as she explains why have things come to this, and how can she be saved? How can she save Mario Cavaradossi?
By selling her body to the devil, essentially.
Right, exactly. So that's the deal at this point, where it's always interesting in productions how they deal with Scarpia, because Scarpia, who's now been so aggressive and angry and evil up to this point, has suddenly to stand still for 3 minutes while she sings her aria, and how to deal with that dramatically and make it work. Often he'll go to the window and stand with crossed arms with his back to her, but she sings. And often, as I said earlier, in this last production I saw, he's taken her cape from her, and he's laying it on the floor when she agrees to give in to him. And he's getting ready for the big drama. And she sits on this and sings the aria, Visi d'arte. Again, we are having to come out of these a little earlier than one would love, but that's okay.
It's still less than an hour show that we have
to... I know. You have to go to the opera. That's the only way to deal with that. And this was Licia Albanese, one of the great interpreters of Tosca in the 1960s. I mean, going back a while now, Some of these great recordings are still great. So anyway, before she gives in to Tosca, gives in to Scarpia, she makes him agree that he was signed safe passage for her and Cavaradossi out of the city of Rome.
And also not execute.
Yeah, the plan is that Scarpia says, well, there has to be an execution, but he arranges that it will be a sham execution. shooting, that the
firing squad won't have bullets.
Well, they'll have dummy bullets, and this is what she agrees to. And then finally, he turns to her and he says, "Tosca, finalmente mia, finally mine." And she has been walking around the room and desperate, wondering what she can do. And she sees a knife on the table, and she picks it up. And as he approaches her, she plunges it into his chest, and he goes down. And
is the only good moment in the whole opera.
I know, it's marvelous. She kills him. She says, "Before him all Rome trembled." And then there's a marvelous scene. What do you do at that point? You've killed your enemy. You're shaking, probably, with fright and fear and terror and anguish. What have I done? And what next? She realized that he's dead. And this ending is always so touching. Sarah Bernhardt did it first. She doesn't just grab her cape and leave. She, first of all, washes her hands. There's water on the table. She washes the blood off her hands. Then she realizes she doesn't have the safe conduct for the two of them to leave after the mock execution, and she sees it in Scarpia's hands. So she goes and she takes it from the dead man's hands. And then, looking around, the good Catholic girl remembers that she needs to do more. She takes two candles from the side of the room, places them beside his body, and places a crucifix on his chest before
silently. Does she go to confession?
Not quite there, but she does that in the next act.
She
does. And she tiptoes out, and that's the second act. The final act, then, is in the night before Cavaradossi is to be executed. It's just pre-dawn at the Castel Sant'Angelo. It's a marvelous setting. Anyone who's been to Rome knows how this is. It's the top battlements are under the great statue of the Archangel Michael brandishing a sword. So Cavaradossi is there, and he sings that he was never more in love with life at this moment when he has to die. And this is the point at which he sings "E luci van la stella," and the recording here is by Pavarotti again.
Thank you.
So Cavaradossi sings his, he believes he's going to die and that this is it. At that point, Tosca appears and she runs to him and she, this is the confession bit. She tells him what she has done, that she has killed the fearsome Scarpia. And he takes, it's a very tender moment, he takes her and says, these little hands have killed the most dangerous man in Rome. And she tells him it's going to be all right, that the firing squad have got dummy bullets, he will not be shot, but he has to act as if he's dying. So she's coaching him. She's being the actress, the diva. She said, this is how you should fall and make sure it's realistic and don't move until the soldiers have left. And then I'll let you know when it's time. At that point, the soldiers come on. They march on stage. You'll hear that marvelous march, the tread of the soldiers as they line Cavaradossi up against the wall. They raise the guns. The command is given and they fire and he falls. She, meantime, is on the sidelines coaching him. She's saying, God, don't move. Don't move. When the soldiers have finally gone, she runs over to him. She says, Mario, it's okay, get up. And she realizes that the bullets were real and that he's actually dead.
And can you believe she's been double-crossed by Scarpia?
She's been
double-crossed.
Can you imagine? Yes, exactly. I told you she was an innocent. She believes too much.
Yeah.
Too idealistic, too romantic. So she is absolutely distraught. And as soon as she realizes what's happened, the soldiers simultaneously realize that she was the one who killed Scarpia and they've come for her. So there's a roar as the soldiers rush on stage and she climbs higher and higher on the battlements until finally she stands on the top and she says, before God, Scarpia, and she jumps to her death as the great chords of Cavaradossi's last aria are heard, in a sense that love conquers all, even if it takes death to do it, which happens so often in opera.
Which happens quite often in
it
opera.
It does.
So it's really a powerful piece.
Scarpia, Cavaradossi. In this case, they all die. Yes,
yeah.
They do.
Yep, Angelotti's dead.
Yeah, yep, they've all gone. It's one of those operas. A lot of Puccini's ended this way. Very few of his. Well, La Fanciulla del West, the Golden Girl of the West out in California, the Sierra Nevada, believe it or not, that opera ends happily. The Annie Get Your Gun type, who is the leading lady in that, saves her man who is abandoned and they ride off into the western sunset. That's a contrast. But typically, they die, and they die in this one. And it's okay because you realize even at the end that love has conquered all, which is the message Puccini likes to get across. So.
Should we hear just a minute or two of the shots, the death scene and everything?
Yes, we could, a little of the end. This is the point from which there's the march of the soldiers and you'll hear the gunfire and her telling him what to do, and it goes right to the end. If there's time to play it, we'll see if there is.
And so we are at the very end of Tosca.
Uh-huh.
The shots have been fired. Mario is dead. Tosca doesn't think he's dead, finds his body.
Yep.
Very sad.
Yep, it is. It's a sad ending.
And we all go home sad. But let's talk for a moment about the Santa Fe Opera production.
Mm-hmm.
Frédéric Chazelain, conductor.
Yes, this is our wonderful resident conductor who is actually been all over the world conducting wonderful orchestras in his time away from Santa Fe. But he's back to conduct two productions this summer. And Tosca, the opening night performance, will be the first. And then he will conduct a Maometto Secondo, the Rossini opera as well this season. It's wonderful to have him. He has a wonderful breadth of experience, and it'll be very special. Stephen Barlow is our director, and the Tosca is a young woman called Amanda Eshelaz, who was one of those fortunate beings who stepped in on a night when another singer couldn't sing. Angela Gheorghiu was to sing Tosca at Covent Garden, and for some reason withdrew at the last moment, and Amanda stepped in to do the magical thing, and apparently was absolutely phenomenal. The rave reviews she got are quite something. So she is going to be our Tosca. It'll be her first time here, obviously, in Santa Fe. So that's going to be very exciting to hear this performance. Her tenor is Andrew Richards, Cavaradossi. It's his first appearance here, too. And as I said, Scarpia will be Raymond Aceto will sing the first performances, and then the great Thomas Hansen will sing Scarpia for the remaining performances. So it's not a widely contemporary version of the production, but nor is it true to the original as written up by Puccini. If you read the libretto, I mean, you with the Zeffirelli production, for instance, you had a reenactment of these three great buildings.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, you've got part of the of what's going on in this opera is the Farnese Palace and these other buildings.
Yeah.
And do opera production, you know, do companies try to give us a sense of those buildings?
Actually, the generic answer to that today is probably not. Most directors are moving away from the traditional interpretations, which I think does lose something in a production like this, which is so locked into those three buildings. Zeffirelli was, every detail was exactly as it would be in the buildings. Now you may not get this at all, or you'll get sort of a hint of it.
I suppose there's always a budget concern.
Yeah. No one can afford to do what Zeffirelli did, I'm afraid, these days. But I don't think that's part of the reason. Otherwise, the concept, this is the day of concept operas. And it can be great, Mary Charlotte, if these productions, I think, are done with integrity and there's reasons and it works with the libretto and the story, then yes, you can do it. But some are very extreme. And that, I'm glad to say, is something that the Santa Fe Opera does tend to steer clear of. Because in my travels through the year to other opera companies, it's been quite horrifying in some cases what the audience is subjected to. And the audience is not happy. The singers are certainly not happy, but they're contracted. They don't have much choice. So this is a trend that I hope is going to go away. But as I say again, it can be done if it's carefully done and done with integrity. And most of these directors have great integrity, but it's not true across the board. So
we've been talking about Tosca by Giacomo Puccini. Desiree, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We've been speaking with Desiree Mays. She is an international speaker on opera. She's the author of the book Opera Unveiled, which comes out every year to accompany the Santa Fe Opera season. She gives the preview lectures nightly at the Santa Fe Opera. For more information on the Santa Fe Opera, you can go to santafeopera.org. You can call 505-986-5900 or 800-280-4654.